This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Ari Shapiro in Washington. As Tolstoy said, all happy families are alike. And boring. Is it any wonder the movies keep returning to the unhappy ones?
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny F***ing K.
That was Chevy Chase playing Clark Griswold in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Just one iconic entry in one of the most beloved genres in film, the dysfunctional family. This hour, a smorgasbord of adultery, rebellion, mental illness, drug addiction, and the occasional criminal indictment. Later, it's your most memorable holiday reunions. But first, look around at your own family this holiday. Who do you see? The Tenenbaums? The Corleones? The Addams Family? What's the dysfunctional film family that most resembles yours? Or which one do you secretly want to be adopted into? Our number here in Washington is 1-800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Our guide through the vicissitudes of La Familia is Murray Horowitz. He is the patriarch of our summer movie festival, and he also runs the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center in Silver Spring, Maryland. Thanks for coming in, Murray.
Thank you, Ari. It's a real pleasure. Merry Christmas.
And to you. You can take off that Santa suit. I think the big white beard might muffle what you say into the microphone.
Well, I'm a patriarch, after all.
Okay, you want to set some ground rules first for this exploration of the dysfunctional family on film?
Yeah, certainly. I'll save my ideas, do them one at a time. Yes, ground rules. First of all, as usual in the Talk of the Nation film series, no TV shows.
No television.
So The Sopranos don't count. And also, family means more than just two people.
So we don't get to talk about Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Well, except they have kids. I think the kids are off screen.
Oh, perfect. Okay, we'll
I'm
get
not
to
sure
them later.
That, but
okay,
maybe
good.
One of our listeners knows. But for example, we can talk about Nick and Nora Charles in The Thin Man because in another Thin Man, they actually have a baby.
Okay, so why do people keep paying to see miserable families on film when we can go enjoy our own for free at home?
I'm thinking of Godfrey Cambridge's great line when he had an African-American, he's an African-American comedian, had African-American domestic worker, you know, the maid in the house. And he said, why do you girls watch soap operas all the time? She said, honey, I just love seeing white folks in trouble. And I think that, like, we love seeing, we all have families. All families have challenges and problems and sometimes very serious ones. And somehow when we see them on film, I guess it somehow expiates our own troubles. I will tell you this, Ari. We have now hit, for all of our topics on Talk of the Nation over the years, this is the motherlode of movie themes.
Neil had to miss it.
Well, he's dealing with family. But in fact, you know, at our theater, at the AFI Silver Theater here in the Washington area, we're showing, this is the time of year we only show first-run movies because we want to give people a heads-up on what awards are coming up. And I realized we're showing four movies over the next few weeks, and they're all about dysfunctional families in some way. We've got Rachel Getting Married and Slumdog Millionaire and Coming Up as Revolutionary Road. And we also have I've Loved You So Long. And all of those deal with many different kinds of dysfunctional families.
Running the gamut from light comedy to heavy drama.
And that's another thing. When you're really dealing, there's some categories here. When you're dealing with a truly, truly dysfunctional family, where dysfunction itself is not funny, it's a problem to be overcome, it's not redemptive in any way, you end up with two kinds of movies, either a very depressing movie like Ordinary People or Capturing the Freedmans or The Squid and the Whale, or something like really, really hilarious like you know, National Lampoon Vacation movies or RV or something like that.
Well, we heard National Lampoon. Let's listen to an example of maybe the more serious genre.
Your mother's going away for a while.
Where? Why?
Back to Houston. I don't know.
It's me, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, it is. It's my fault.
Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself. It's nobody's fault. Things happen in this world. People don't always have the answers for them, you know?
Of course, that was Ordinary People from 1980 with Donald Sutherland. And now here's a movie that had a suicide, a troubled marriage, a psychiatrist, you know, everything, the gamut.
You got something for everybody.
Yeah. But the troubled family, as you were saying, really does run the range from one end to the other.
That's right. Yeah. We'll finish what you're going to say.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh, well, my favorite is absolutely. It's first of all, there are certain when I talk to my staff and we talk to my colleagues at AFI and also the staff here at Talk of the Nation, we realize that there are certain filmmakers who are only about that. You can take almost any Woody Allen movie, right?
Right.
Or any W.C. Fields movie. And my favorite dysfunctional family on film is W.C. Fields' family in The Pharmacist.
Let's take a listen.
Sit down and behave yourself.
Oh, Jean Will.
Oh, Jean.
Mom, what's technocracy?
Ask your father, dear.
Pop, what's technocracy?
Yes, indeed, eh? That's, say, will you eat your soup and stop asking silly questions? And stop that.
Oh, gee, I like to pop it.
One more pop and I'll pop you in the eye.
This is a W.C. Fields short from 1933. And I have to tell you, my favorite moment in this film is when he gives his young daughter his cocktail shaker, installs it on her pogo stick, and tells her to jump around so that his martini will be mixed.
It's wonderful. And there really is, as in a lot of the best, there really is almost nothing redemptive about it. I mean, it's just tough living in this family, but somehow you're laughing the whole time. Then another category is, and maybe the biggest one, is the families where the dysfunction is functional. I mean, they seem dysfunctional, but there's a real family there. So
yeah.
That's like You Can't Take It With You or Juno or, you know, Little Miss Sunshine.
Actually, I think we have an example of one of those from a caller right now. This is Mike in Fresno, California. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. We're talking about functional families dysfunctional families that may in fact have some functionality underneath them. And I understand you were calling with an example of that.
I think so. I believe the Addams Family on television solved most of their problems in 30 minutes, which I identify with.
Well, and in the movies, they solved them in 2 hours.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and one of those Addams Family spinoffs was filmed up in the Sierras close to Fresno, so I kind of identify with that. But the Addams Family on television stayed at home. I'm retired. I identify with that. They didn't hurt anybody. They solved most of their problems in 30 minutes. And if they were possible descendants of John Adams, they can't be all bad. Possible descendants of Sam Adams, there's a possibility they might have some beer in the fridge.
Well, Mike, you've ignored our first rule, but happily you squeaked in. We're not talking about television shows here, but the Addams Family films show a family that is very functional indeed, I'd argue,
right.
Even though everybody thinks of them as dysfunctional.
And there are a lot of those. They're another TV film combination. The Simpsons was a film, so we can talk about the Simpsons
absolutely.
Film. Another totally dysfunctional, yet in a way kind of functional family.
Right.
How much are we projecting our own problems onto them? That's something I haven't figured out yet.
Murray, you want to take off your film studies hat and put on your psychoanalyst hat?
Well, it's funny you mentioned psychoanalyst because therapy, as you mentioned, in ordinary people, has a lot to do with this. You know, we get families going to counseling. We've got psychiatrists involved. I think, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, Mike, I think we do somehow get our own family problems out, or they become somewhat less problematic when you look at a family on film.
There you go.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And now let's go to another caller. We have Michael in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, guys. I have two examples from one magnificent filmmaker that go the opposites. The Annie Hall family.
Right.
Especially Grandma Hall and her brother.
We're talking Woody Allen here.
Right. And by Woody Allen also, Martin Landau's family. In an incredibly intense movie, Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Ah, yes.
The absolute opposites of hysterical comedy and jaw-dropping grief.
Let's hear a clip of that one.
Why did you write that letter?
You know why we've been through it.
You want to destroy my life and my family?
I wanted to know the kind of man she's married to.
It was lying on the table all day. By sheer chance, she didn't open it. By a miracle, I got it first.
You told me over and over again you'd leave Miriam. We made plans.
I didn't.
You did.
That was, of course, Angelica Houston threatening to reveal the affair she's having with the character played by Martin Landau in Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Right. And again, you can take almost any Woody Allen film. Hannah and Her Sister's a good one. Interiors is a good one. There's just a million of them that Mighty Aphrodite, just that deal with families that are somehow a little bit frayed at the edges.
Thanks for the call, Michael.
Thank you, guys.
Well, Murray, do you see distinctions from one culture to another? I mean, we're talking about Woody Allen, who makes films that are in a way iconically Jewish. Is there a difference between Jewish dysfunction and WASPy dysfunction or African-American dysfunction
That matter? It's interesting you mention that. And here we are, you know, folks are spending, our listeners are spending Christmas with Shapiro and Horwitz on NPR, so I guess we could talk about it.
Is anyone surprised by that?
It's funny. I wouldn't think so much about Woody Allen as I would about Barry Levinson. Mm-hmm. Barry Levinson, in his great Baltimore movies, particularly Liberty Heights and I'm thinking of the other one where they're all having Thanksgiving dinner, I think it is, and the whole family's together, and this is in the 40s or 50s, and everybody's talking. It's a very functional family, and by the end of the film, they're all watching, like, the Ed Sullivan Show, eating their meals on TV trays. And I think that, in that way, the Jewish family in Levinson's film is really no different from the average American family. I do think it's an American theme in a lot of ways.
I want to ask you more about that after the break. But in addition, you mentioned Baltimore, which opens the whole John Waters oeuvre.
That's right.
A masterpiece of dysfunctional families.
Absolutely.
Well, it is the holidays. So please, put down the eggnog, pick up the gin, and let's talk about family dysfunction on film. What is the movie family that most resembles yours? Which family do you hope might adopt you, which fictional film family might adopt you someday? We're taking your calls at 1-800-989-8255, or you can send us an email. That address is talk@npr.org. I'm Ari Shapiro, and it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Ari Shapiro in Washington. Christmas is a time for reuniting with friends and family. Later in the show, what was your most memorable holiday reunion? Send us an email, talk@npr.org. First, reuniting with family is not always a pleasant experience. Sometimes it means swallowing the loving advice of your mother.
You got a love bite on your neck. He's coming back this morning. What's the matter with you? Your life's going down the toilet. Cover up that damn thing. Come on, put some makeup on.
Right. That's Olympia Dukakis in Moonstruck giving some helpful encouragement to her daughter, Cher. This hour, we're putting the fun in dysfunction, looking at the wacky, crazy, sometimes murderous world of dysfunctional families on film. I'm here with our movie honcho, Murray Horwitz. He runs the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in Silver Spring, Maryland. And we also want to hear from you. Which movie family's problems most resemble yours? Give us a call at 1-800-989-8255 or email us at talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. We have an email here from Tony in Kansas City, Missouri, who writes, favorite dysfunctional family and favorite Christmas movie is A Lion in Winter. Murder threats, betrayal, and Christmas. What could be better? Plus, Kate Hepburn and Peter O'Toole. Murray Horwitz, is there something higher stakes about family dysfunction in holiday movies because at the holidays everybody expects to have and wants to have the Norman Rockwell experience?
Yeah, I think so. You know, a recent movie with Vince Vaughn that was actually a terribly high-grossing dysfunctional family movie was Fred Claus, you know. And you could, I guess, argue with all those elves around and Mrs. Claus, maybe that's a dysfunctional family too up at the North Pole. But yeah, I mean, holidays tend to bring out the most in people. Everything intensifies. And I think it's the Barry Levinson movie I was thinking of before is Avalon. And it's not for nothing that it starts and ends on a holiday. And I think it's very true.
Let's take another caller. This is Ted in Kansas City. Hi, Ted.
Hi, this is Ted. I thought of a movie, Soul Food, although it's not on Christmas, but it does involve a family and getting around together on the holidays.
Yeah, what appeals to you about it?
Well, the fact that the entire family gets together and they come together in a a dysfunctional way because they need to be held together, and it takes an incident to get them together. But then I thought of another movie that we didn't talk about, the two dysfunctional movies, but they actually work, and that would be Love Actually and Bad Santa.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Bad Santa, which we've just been showing, actually, does involve, I guess, a kind of extended. Well, we can't just use couples. What's the dysfunctional family besides Billy? What's his name? Bill. Gosh.
In the movie, there's the family that he ends up staying with the little boy.
Oh, Billy Bob Thornton. Right. Billy Bob Thornton, thank you.
Billy Bob Thornton, and then Billy Bob ends up taking care of the young boy and helping him mature and get better at it, and brings in, you know, the young woman who's the bartender.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden they become a family, and it helps his family in a way, and helps the grandmother, and, you know, there are a lot of different odd things that I like about it.
No, it's true. And I'm glad that you mentioned Soul Food, a 1997 movie, because there it's the matriarch who has to, like, always keep the family together on the holiday with her soul food, right? And then drama ensues.
You know, we've talked a little bit about what Jewish dysfunction might be like. Is there a whole different category of African-American dysfunctional families
in
the movies?
Well, you know, Raisin in the Sun is probably at once the most redemptive, but also and this is one of those... Again, maybe a third category, which is the dysfunctional family that overcomes the dysfunction, that makes it through the dysfunction.
Actually, I think we have a more contemporary example in a more comedic vein. there's a cut here from Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns.
My daddy was a saint.
Your daddy was a pimp.
He was not a pimp. My daddy used to date nice women. Remember Sweet Sadie?
Yes.
Yeah. Good girl.
She was one of his hoes?
Ho. What about the girl Agnes with the freckles? She was a good girl, Agnes.
Freckle face home.
Thanks for the call, Ted. You know, we don't hear a lot of talk in Jewish dysfunctional family movies about daddy's hose, I guess we're allowed to say on the air.
No, I don't remember that ever having been a topic at my house. But then I come from an extremely functional family. We talked a little bit, though, Ari, about... American versus foreign. And I really sort of looked around for foreign movies, particularly classic foreign films that had some dysfunctional family thing to them. And they exist. There was a wonderful film by Michael Haneke which has nothing to do with Jewish dysfunctional families, last year called Cachet. There's Rocco and his brothers. There's Akira Kurosawa's Ron, which is King Lear, after all. And that's what's curious about this to me. The dysfunctional family is the basis of Greek mythology, right?
Oedipus, it's the basis, Medea, right? It's all over.
It's the basis of a lot of Shakespeare plays.
Lear,
right?
The daughters,
Henry the Fourth, all those, right? And yet, in America, somehow this whole idea has taken root, and maybe our listeners have some idea on why that is. But...
Well, let's take another caller. This is James from Portland, Oregon. Hi, James.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. You snowed in.
You guys have talked at all about Wes Anderson yet?
Of course.
No, it's true. And well, we did. Did we mention we actually have an example of a Wes Anderson film?
Yeah,
right?
He's practically made a career out of dysfunctional families. Let's listen.
Yeah.
Where is the doctor?
No, just wait a second now. Wait a second. Okay, listen. I'm not dying, but I need some time, a month or so. Okay. I want us to.
What's wrong with you?
Damn. Ethel.
Are you crazy?
I love this scene. It's Gene Hackman having just told his wife, Angelica Houston, that he's dying, and then revealing that he's actually not dying.
Right. And it's right. James is right that one of his, I guess his most recent film, Wes Anderson's Darjeeling Limited, with three extraordinarily dysfunctional brothers. All of his movies, and there aren't that many of them, don't forget, there's just about, you know, a half a dozen or so Wes Anderson movies, but he's one of those people who's actually able to walk that fine line between comedy and tragedy and dealing with the dysfunctional family.
Thanks a lot for the call, James.
Hey, thank you, guys. Take care.
You too. We've got an email here from David in University Heights, Ohio. He writes, "This one's been around for a while now, but I really loved Used People, not only because of the family dysfunction, but because of what they did with it. Lots to this movie, a great cast too. Shirley MacLaine, Marcello Mastroianni, Kathy Bates, Jessica Tandy, and more." Murray, do you see family dysfunction evolving over the decades as we go from something like The Pharmacist in the 30s, which we listened to earlier, to something like The Royal Tenenbaums, which was much more recent?
Yeah, absolutely. Because at a certain point, earlier any dysfunctional family movies involve bad people. You think of some of those gangster movies like Little Caesar and Public Enemy and White Heat. And functional families were the norm. You know, it's Love Finds Andy Hardy, you know, and it was dad, mom, junior, and sis, and all was well. But then with an increased awareness of psychology and psychological realism, World War II had intervened, and then you get, you know, in the best
A little
years,
more honesty,
right,
and a
right,
little
right,
more
right,
gray
right.
area.
So that even that wonderful American Family, one of my favorite movies of all time, The Best Years of Our Lives, guess what? If your son comes home a double amputee, don't expect everything to be hunky-dory all the right. time. He's going to explode from time to time. So then dysfunction creeps into nice people's lives. And then I think the real break point was Ordinary People in 1980, where it was grim and grim all the way through, and an extraordinary directorial debut for Robert Redford.
Which we heard at the top of the show.
Yep.
Right. Well, let's take another caller. This is Pam in Milton, Massachusetts. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Listen, I was going to say, you know, Mommy Dearest is definitely, I don't know if that counts as just two people or not.
What a
it
great
does.
Movie.
But, you know, Joan Crawford in her own life, besides the movie, you know, that's the thing. Oh, wire hangers.
That's right.
Right. One of the most indelible lines in film. Actually, we have a cut of a different Joan Crawford film in which, ironically, she's being mistreated by her daughter. Let's take a listen.
Vita, I think I'm really seeing you for the first time in my life, and you're cheap and horrible.
You think just because you made a little money you can get a new hairdo and some expensive clothes and turn yourself into a lady. But you can't, because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing. With this money, I can get away from every rotten, stinking thing that makes me think of this place or you.
Pam, any guesses?
Mildred Pierce?
Yes, good. 100 points. We don't have a bell here. Ding. Right. You smell of grease, mother. It's just an amazing. And again, a real melodrama that in some strange right around World War II that showed us, you know, psychology creeping in and real family dysfunction.
Maurice, we know that Mommy Dearest was based on a memoir tied to real life.
Right.
Could one reason that we've seen so many family dysfunction movies be that people are told to write what they know, and a lot of these filmmakers are writing from their own experience?
Well, and also, as a couple of the listeners have pointed out, somehow we see ourselves in these films.
Yeah.
Look, the Andy Hardy movie is not, I mean, the norm is not norm, is not normal. And that Hollywood ideal, I think, especially after World War II, didn't have much resonance in people's lives. So you're going to see your quirky characters, and you're going to see your, you know, your strangenesses and your conflicts. And of course, yeah, it's about writing what you know.
And these movies do well in the box office.
Do very, very well. In fact, you can go online, as our crack Talk of the Nation staff has done, and find a list of the biggest box office done by dysfunctional family movies. And The Simpsons, which is the most, The Simpsons movie tops the list. And we said we're not talking about TV, but after all, The Simpsons is the longest running television show of all time, and it's sitcom, and it's about a dysfunctional family.
Pam, thanks for the call.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
You know, these movies have also won Oscars. I mean, looking at this list of family dysfunction films that have done really well, there's Little Miss Sunshine, there's American Beauty. These are not just financial moneymakers. They're also critical successes.
Well, if you're Judge Hardy in the Andy Hardy movies, right, I mean, there's not much for you to play. I'm thinking of those, those movies in the 30s with the young vivacious debutante who is Katharine Hepburn or Ginger Rogers or whomever, and the idiot father who is a just complete bumbling bonehead, except it's never explained exactly how this man managed to make millions of dollars to keep his daughters in, you know, furs and jewels and gowns. Those, you know, Charles Coburn, Eugene Paulette characters are usually very interesting characters. So these films about dysfunctional families give actors something to play. They give directors something to direct, rather than the films where the family's hunky-dory and everything's all's right with the world.
Yeah. We have an email here from Jason in Baltimore, Maryland, who writes, "My uncle was from Connecticut. Our family was from Maryland. And as a child of the 70s, The Ice Storm was the movie that explained so much that went over my head as a young child. It is a great movie." Murray, I wonder if as adults we enjoy revisiting a lot of what might have gone over our heads as a child that we then appreciate in a movie like The Ice Storm.
I think so. This is an Ang Lee movie with Kevin Kline and Joan Allen, a terrific cast, a very young Tobey Maguire. It's actually Tobey Maguire and Elijah Wood, so are your throbs. I think so. I think you grow into things. One of our producers, Barry Hardiman, mentioned that in Meet Me in St. Louis, for example, which is a musical, and there are a lot of dysfunctional families in musicals even, leaving aside Sweeney Todd. but there's something weird, you know, the father's losing his job, there's conflict within the family, there's a lot of tough times and dysfunction in that family.
We're talking to Murray Horowitz about dysfunction in family films, family dysfunction in films, rather, on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to another caller. This is Mark in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Hello.
So what's your nomination?
Well, I got to say, definitely with The Godfather, one of a really fantastic example of family gone wrong or gone right, I suppose.
Yeah, another example of one of these dysfunctional families that may in fact be functional, murder notwithstanding. Let's listen to a clip.
I'm your older brother, Mike, and I was stepped over.
That's the way Pop wanted it.
I'm like everybody says, like dumb, I'm smart, and I want respect.
Of course, not long after that, Michael has Freda whacked. But
right. Although, this might be a good example of a family making its way through the dysfunction and overcoming it. You know, you could argue that the Corleones at the end are a functional family. The Tattaglias maybe not so much.
Right, right, exactly. Mark, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Let's go to Hannah in Lincoln, Massachusetts. Hi, Hannah.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call. It's a great segment you're doing.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
The first one that came to mind was The Family Stone, which is not just Holiday, but family dysfunction, with the point of redemption at the end, too. It just took, when my husband and I saw it, we were so surprised by the end, but loved it.
Yeah, Murray, do a lot of these movies end on an up note, or do we end a lot of them sort of with bleakness as we leave the theater?
Again, you're talking with this about this huge number
genre,
of films and many. Right, so the answer is yes and no. It's interesting what Hannah says about The Family Stone, because I think this was a very conscious attempt on the part of the Wilson brothers, really, to make a movie about dysfunction and yet, you know, surprise people. And but in the range of movies, sometimes they leave you with not feeling so terrifically satisfied, and still thinking that this family's in just as bad a shape as it was at the beginning of the movie. Others put a little cherry on top, you know, and they put a kind of false resolution on it. And others, there really is redemption. I'm thinking of an animated film, for example, The Incredibles, where they are tested, they're dysfunctional in a certain way, but they overcome the dysfunction.
Yeah, let's take a listen. This is The
Dash
Incredibles.
Dash got sent to the office again.
What? What for?
Nothing. He put a tack on the teacher's chair during class.
Nobody saw me. You could barely see it on the tape.
They caught you on tape and you still got away with it? Whoa. You must have been booking. How fast do you think you were going?
We are not encouraging this.
I'm not encouraging. I'm just asking how fast you...
Honey!
That was The Incredibles. Yet another in our list of functional, dysfunctional families.
Right, exactly.
Thanks for your call, Hannah.
Thanks.
All right, this is Judy. Judy is calling from River Falls, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
My family is kind of like Throw Mama from the Train.
Ah.
Christo, Danny DeVito.
What a great movie.
Yes, and they're...
But I would hate to think that that's actually your family.
Well, there's never a holiday that this one's not talking to that one, or that someone has a problem with something, and it's critical, and it's stupid, and we love each other, but... You have to deal with this. I mean, we just, some of us have been helped by psychologists, and then there's the other ones we're trying to help.
Right.
So it's, but it really does. I mean, it's, in fact, this year, I mean, I'm not spending Christmas with my family because my sister's daughters decided they didn't like something I did. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's the case for many people out there today. Thanks for your call, Judy.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, Murray, stay with us if you would. After the break, we're going to talk more about dysfunctional families on film. Our guest is Murray Horowitz of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center here in the Washington area. I'm Ari Shapiro, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, Murray Horowitz is with us talking about family dysfunction in film, and we're going to go to a caller. This is Evie in Boise, Idaho. Hi, Evie.
Hi, it's Evie.
Oh, Evie, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. Nobody gets it right half the time. How about It's a Wonderful Life?
Yeah.
Billy doesn't make the deposit. George thinks he's a failure, gets drunk, tries to kill himself.
Right, and what he says to
never gets to travel where he wants to, and the angel is kind of an inept fellow, but
which,
lovable.
Based on your description, doesn't sound like the makings of a Christmas classic, and yet
it
is.
But here again, it's redemptive, isn't it, Evie? I mean, you know, even when he curses out his uncle for being such a fool, I mean, somehow it all comes around right in the end.
It does indeed. It's a fun movie, good movie, beautifully acted.
And thank you for mentioning it on Christmas Day.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Evie.
Good holiday season.
You too.
I also have to mention, all right, you know, you did mention Harold Pinter, and one of the great, and this is a foreign film, but The Homecoming is one of the great portraits of a dysfunctional family on screen.
You know, there's a whole genre we haven't talked about, which is functional children meeting dysfunctional parents. I'm thinking there's The Birdcage, there's Father of the Bride,
right.
Meet the Parents, and the sequel Meet the Fockers. This is an endless supply of humor.
That's true, and it's got an old sort of pedigree. I did mention those dancing daughters kinds of. Actually, one of my favorite silent melodramas with Joan Crawford and Johnny Mac Brown, Our Dancing Daughters, is that kind of film, and there are some sort of lighthearted versions too.
Yeah, I think we have an example of one film that could fit that description.
If the love's on skids, treat your folks like kids, or your family tree's gonna snap.
So to make them dig, first you gotta rig.
What do you gotta rig?
The Parent Trap.
Ah, The Parent Trap, where Lindsay Lohan got her start in the remake.
That's...
Of course, that was the version with Haley Mills.
Thank you for pointing that out, Ari. It's great. But you know,
speaking of dysfunctional families,
one of the things that and it might have been my son Alex, who's a filmmaker, pointed this out, is that a lot of Disney films, you know, Cinderella, terrible dysfunctional family, Little Mermaid, The Lion King. You know, the Disney deals with this stuff.
Well, you know, I think there is a children's motif of kind of the orphan fantasy.
Yeah,
you know, we see this in Annie, we see this in Oliver. Kids like the idea of this independence theme, which sort of necessitates having a dysfunctional family.
Making their own way in the world. And it's true, because no matter how functional your family, in a way, when you're a kid, the idea is that you need to be making your way in the world. And maybe you're onto something there about why this has been such fertile ground for American filmmakers. Because in America, we rear kids to be independent, which they don't do in other cultures. And so it's maybe why this theme has a little bit of resonance over here. And every genre, Ari, I mean, gangster films, musicals, slapstick comedies, film noir, epic films, documentaries. It's just you find
March of the Penguins, dysfunctional fathers all over. Murray Horowitz, it's always a pleasure talking with you.
A great pleasure talking to you, Ari. Merry Christmas.
And happy Hanukkah to you.
Thanks.
Murray Horowitz is the director and COO of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center, which is here in the Washington area. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Murray, we also want to thank Brooke Logan and your staff at AFI as well.
Me too. Thanks so much.
Good to have you here.
Good to be here.